Welcome to the HR Locker podcast. On today's show, we speak to Shane Keneally, Director of Policy and Communications at Chambers Ireland. Chambers Ireland is the largest Irish business network with a geographic reach and membership base that spans cities, towns and communities nationwide. In today's episode, we discuss remote, hybrid and flexible working, the return to the office full-time, recent layoffs, and how management styles may have to change due to the ever-changing workforce. All Shane's details will be at the bottom of the pod, and we really hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to today's podcast. My name is Christelle Rain, and I'm the Chief Operations Officer here at HR Locker. Today, we're delighted to have Shane with us from Chambers Ireland. Shane, thank you so much for joining us today. So Shane, if you could give a bit of an intro on yourself and what you do with Chambers Ireland.
Thank you very much, Christelle. So I'm Shane Keneally. I'm the head of policy in Chambers Ireland. Chambers Ireland is then the national body which represents the Chambers of Commerce throughout the country. So we have 39 member chambers around the country. Some of them are very big. So, you know, places like Dublin and Cork and Limerick have been around for hundreds of years. Some of them are relatively small. So we have kind of county level chambers in the likes of Kildare, Meath, and some of them are even smaller again, where they kind of represent their local towns. So we have a very geographical presence across the country. And our unique selling point as a business representative organization is that we are geographical in nature. So wherever you go in the country, you'll find a chamber there, and they'll be part of the business community locally.
Yes, and for sure, Shane, I think there isn't certainly not a county I've been into that there hasn't been a chamber at some level. And what I enjoy with the chambers is that there's just a huge diverse membership. You know, some it could be retail and multinationals, manufacturing. It brings all types of companies together.
This is the thing. I mean, like, if you're, you know, I know you're in the West, but like, you know, wherever you go in the West, you know, we have a huge pharma footprint across the country. You know, there's a lot of med tech in Galway, you know, and as a result, kind of, you know, even the smaller towns will have very large multinational members as well.
And I think the key is from that networking or membership basis is that sometimes we're afraid to actually meet with each other because we think we're all in competition. But actually, the learning from people is just outweighs it. I think it's even if you're in a different industry, we all have the same problems, ultimately.
And well, I mean, the thing about the chambers people is that they're, I mean, we tend to be people, you know, the people, yeah. The person who kind of sets up the chamber in their local town, who heads it up, they're in the center of their local business community. They get to know everybody and they become a vector for everyone else to get to know the rest of the community, to find those new clients, find new opportunities.
I think so. Shane, we're living in this world of, I'm sick of people saying, you know, the new way we work or the new workforce, because I think we're living in a changing environment constantly. And it's not just COVID, it's hybrid working, remote working. It's just the way we work is constantly changing and has been for the last 500 years, basically. So trying to keep up with that, I think is really important. And I think sometimes we forget that we may change the way we work, but a lot of the time we don't educate our managers in terms of actually how to manage that transition if we're changing to a remote workplace or we're changing to a hybrid workplace or we're changing to, you know, we're bringing really back to the office. How does the manager actually do that? So a recent survey said that 62% of employees reported that their managers didn't listen to them and failed to provide adequate feedback. So really just to enable them to figure out how they're supposed to perform their job effectively. You know, do you think that this is a recent problem because of hybrid and remote working? Or do you think it is just an overall management problem that we've had for years and years?
I think you could hit the nail on the head when you said that change is happening. I think kind of change is happening to different sectors at different rates. I think that, you know, some of us who are more technically minded probably have a lot of experience in that kind of remote working, flexible working space. Some sectors have had long experience with it. And I think kind of the age of firms matters as well. So I'll get into that in a second. But the, you know, there's a lot of managers around the country that have been doing the same job for quite a while. And all of a sudden, the world has changed around them and they're having to react to it. So like we see it amongst our members where one of the areas where they do require the most training, they desire the most training, is in and around how to manage teams remotely, hybrid, etc. And that's become a necessity. So we know from around the country, and this is everywhere in the country, you know, the first question that an employer gets asked when they put a job up is, you know, is it hybrid or is it remote? And if it's not, you know, what we're getting back is that people aren't even asking what the salary is. You know, that's how strongly they preference that. Now, it's not everybody. Different sectors have different requirements, particularly those that require, you know, the kind of people who take on people at the start of their careers. They very much have to, you know, have that face time with individuals. There has to be that skills transfer to help them grow within the team. But, you know, for people who kind of are moving on in their career, moving up in their career, I think kind of that mix of both life challenges, but also kind of opportunities means that, you know, that they are taking more advantage of the remote working options. When I said kind of the age of the firm matters as well, I think kind of what I've seen, because I'm a data head, I'm a policy person, you know, and when our chambers are experiencing problems around the country, they come to me with the problems and then we have to go advocating for the solutions and come up with the solutions. What we see kind of in the Irish workplace is that, you know, our very large firms are hugely technologically engaged, a lot of work on digitization, huge productivity, the MNCs are there. All the foreign direct investment is flowing through that, and obviously productivity is very good. At the other end of the market, at the micro end, similarly, we see that as, you know, people are very, you know, well engaged with their technology. So obviously, if you're somebody who's running a small firm, you've probably, you know, either managed to survive the great financial crisis and Brexit and COVID and everything else to get to this point. You know, if you're somebody who set up a new business in that time, you know, you've dealt with serious challenges trying to get it up off the ground during an awful lot of crisis. I was kind of doing a back of the envelope calculation there recently, and I was working out that, you know, we've had about 3 years of relatively stable economic environment since I graduated back in 2006. Wow. So times have been complex for a lot of employers. So at the smaller firms, what we find is that people are, you know, they are people who are running their payroll digitally. There are people who are using their emails. There are people who are using their calendars to manage all that kind of stuff, which used to be, you know, managed by someone in the office or someone, you know, elsewhere that was an assistant to them. So we're finding that, you know, the smaller firms tend to be much more productive. Some of the other business representative groups and ourselves are in the Oireachtas there last week, you know, and we're kind of working it out between us. Like, we're all in around kind of 9, 10, 12 employees, that kind of range. But realistically, we're probably doing the work of like 14, 15 people, you know. So everybody is flat out all the time. Everyone is busy all of the time. And that's true, from what I can gather, across our membership, no matter what sector they happen to be in. Now, where we see kind of difficulties or opportunities, you know, these things go hand in hand, is in the small to kind of medium sector. So, you know, the small firms are kind of under the size of 50, but above 10, you know, so they're kind of relatively substantial operations, and they're slower to develop. They have been slower to develop their digital skills. And I think a lot of that has to do with these being firms that have been around a while. And, you know, people get used to, you know, doing the same thing most days and not changing things too much if it's been working before. And now a big change has happened, you know. And those firms are the ones that had to do an awful lot to digitize, to allow the remote and flexible working over the COVID period. And they're the ones where, you know, you had an embedded manager who probably had a job which was managing, which was, you know, looking over the shoulder, making sure everyone's working as hard as they're supposed to be doing. And I'm not, you know, obviously kind of that kind of person will feel a little bit lost in a remote world. But the fact is that, you know, it'll require a different kind of management. I know with myself, what I look to is outputs. You know, I try to make sure that my team members are not, you know, overdoing it. They're not working too hard, which is one of the risks of kind of the hybrid period. I try to make sure that, you know, they're doing it to the quality that's needed, the amount of output that's needed. You know, that if there's problems, I'm there, you know, whenever they have problems. And these kind of things I find work very well, but I have to trust them, you know. And the flip side to it is that they have to be self-motivated. They have to be capable of, you know, actually doing the work and not, you know, not getting distracted as the day goes on.
And Shane, I'm surprised with that you said that the micro enterprises, what I would call micro, kind of 10 less are so adapting, because I would have thought that, wrongly so, I would have thought that the likes of the 40 or 50 man companies would have had that tech in place. They have a big organization, you know, really in Ireland, that is a substantial organization to be able to put in that tech. But after what you're saying, I suppose it kind of does make sense that they're probably well established in their roles. The one role that they're doing, whereas that 10 or 12 man company, you're probably doing three or four roles. So you just have, you adapting is what you do every single day.
Yeah. I mean, like, where everyone has to be flexible, you know, then, you know, that means that the CEO needs to do some calm stuff. That means that, you know, nobody gets to be too precious about what it is their role is and where the boundaries are, because we all have to come together. We had a huge one there last week ourselves. So we're 100 years in operation. So we did a big dinner with the Taoiseach. And that meant that, you know, everybody had to get down. I was doing graphic design, trying to organize menus. My colleagues were doing all kinds of other things, you know. And that's what happens when you're in a small organization. So, like, you know, you require that flexibility. And, you know, if you need to pick up a skill, you've got to pick up a skill. Larger organizations, you know, it means that, you know, people can't get very comfortable with what they're doing. And I think they're the ones that have experienced the greatest shock.
Interesting. And I also think that it's something that I harp on about, same as yourself, is that we're talking about outputs, or like I always think of, I was interviewing somebody recently in terms of what does productivity look like? It is productivity that somebody's at their desk Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, because that used to be what productivity was. And, you know, you're talking about that manager whose job was to manage the person in the office, and more than likely they managed them on the basis that they were at their desk from Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. They worked late. That was great, you know, brownie point for that person. Whereas I suppose what you said something that I 100% believe in is that we are moving away from that, or we should be moving away from that, to actually, well, what was the output? I actually don't care if you were at your desk from Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. It's actually that you produced and actually did your job at the end of that. But with that, Shane, which you said, comes trust. You have, that's the key element, right? Is that just because I don't see you from Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 sitting at your desk, you have to be able to trust your employees is the crux of it, which is hard.
It depends on the employee. You know, I mean, like, you know, you have to be able to, you know, manage these relationships and work with the individuals and figure out, like, you know, what people are good at doing and helping them kind of excel at, you know, things. And, you know, currently kind of, you know, I had to retool my entire team during COVID. You know, and they're all coming up to being about a year on the job now. And we had a very busy year of, you know, recruiting and onboarding people completely remotely at that point. And it's been great to see kind of how much they've come on, you know, kind of individuals kind of strengthening in ways that they didn't even realize themselves they had the potential to do it. And and certainly after a year, for myself as well, it's been great to have, you know, be able to give them that responsibility and watch them run with it.
What are you guys seeing at the moment, Shane, in regards to members, or just in terms of your own policy in regards to that remote working, hybrid, mandating back to the office? You know, is there a common thread per industry? Obviously, some jobs you have to be there. But in terms of those jobs where you're not required to be, you're not physically required to be in the office, are we looking at companies mandating to be back? Is it just a total mixture of hybrid? Is there any one size fits all policy anymore?
I don't think things have settled yet. You know, like, my intuition will be that, is, you know, there are people for whom working in office is the best place for them to work. You know, like, I don't have kids, so me working away from home, sitting down at the desk, means I have no distractions at all. So for my cousins, you know, they'll find the exact opposite. They're dying to get out of the house, to get into the office in order to get that headspace to get the work done. So there's a lot of variation there, you know, both for employees and for firms. I think one of the big journeys over the next period will be that, you know, resorting and that rematching to ensure that the kind of people are working in the kind of place that suits them best, whatever it is. The way things stand at the moment, though, I think that the kind of the labour market is too tight for that to happen. I think that surely what we're seeing is that, you know, there's a massive hunger for talent across the country. That's everywhere in the country. What we're seeing is that, you know, the people in the cities are desperate for anyone they can get their hands on, and they're willing to pay for it. What we're seeing is that people who are, you know, perhaps were based in the country and were, you know, had a range of potential employers that was within, you know, half an hour drive of their home, now discover that they can actually work remotely, or they can, you know, do a day a week up in Dublin or down in Cork or wherever they happen to be, which is giving them much more opportunities. That's meaning that, you know, there's been a drift of kind of more seasoned talent away from enterprises which are based in the more regional areas, as, you know, those high skilled back office people are going towards the remote work. So I think kind of over the next period of time, we'll see those firms in regional areas having to rely more on perhaps less skilled people. And there's a risk in it that they'll end up kind of, you know, upskilling somebody for the first couple of years of their experience, and then they get to jet off to some other new and exciting world afterwards.
Yeah, and actually that's a really interesting point, Shane, even for ourselves. You know, we've always had a remote element. We are now 100% remote. But previously, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, we're based by the beach, we're based in Lahinch, and it was an attraction for people to move down from Dublin, to move down to the west coast of Ireland, maybe take a little bit of a hidden salary, but they were moving for a lifestyle. Whereas now they can take that lifestyle and also work in Dublin. You know, so it's an interesting, you know, how will those regional enterprises still compete for talent, which is interesting. I also had a friend recently, Shane, who she was moving jobs, and I was shocked with that. She had a new job throughout the entire interview process within 2.5 weeks. And because they were just desperate for talent. The job originally wasn't advertised as remote. She had said she wanted remote, and they were basically like, absolutely whatever you want, because we need somebody.
And that's very common story across the country, you know. Like, you know, we are at full employment. Yeah. That's just a great position to be in. I think kind of the housing situation is being a huge constraint on our kind of overall economy. And that this is one of the ways in which it is kind of coming out, just that the growth is there. Like, the message we get back from almost all of our members is that, you know, that there's work that they're leaving behind, there's work they're leaving on the table because they don't have the staff to deliver it. You know, there's opportunities out there that they can't take advantage of. And, you know, that a lot of that has to do with kind of the difficulty in kind of finding talent arising out of the housing crisis. So I can see kind of, you know, if you are somebody who is that hungry for talent, and, you know, you have somebody who happens to be the far side of the country but can do the job, you know, you're absolutely willing to.
And interesting, Shane, I don't know if you have seen this at all, or any of the members, in terms of Chambers Ireland in general, all the different chambers. I was interviewed recently and they'd asked me, had we seen an influx in terms of applicants because of the redundancies from, you know, multinationals that have been in the news, your Twitter, your Facebook, Salesforce, things like that. We haven't seen that. And I haven't spoken to any other company who has seen that either. And like I said, we seem to be at full employment, but there does not seem to have been this influx of people who've been made redundant on the workforce. Would you have the same experience?
Yeah, especially one of our arguments is that, you know, we have two parallel economies in Ireland. We have the foreign direct investment economy and we have the domestic economy.
Yes.
And, you know, there's, you know, paths between both. But I think that, you know, if you're somebody who was working in an engineering role in one of those big firms, and you're looking at your next, you know, your the next stage of your career, having gotten your redundancy payoff, you're probably going to look towards something in that sector as well, not least because of the wages. You know, they are, you know, considerably higher paid than, you know, us mere mortals down in the domestic sector, you know. And, you know, it is a feature of those salaries that very often they start at six figures, you know. I know that even in kind of ops roles in some of those places, you know, they could have, you know, graduate entries 3 or 4 years ago starting at 50,000-60,000. So it's very hard for, you know, the SME sector, the domestic economy, to, you know, be able to remunerate people to the same degree. So even if they're willing to take a hit in salary, you know, it could be a 30,000-40,000 hit, which leaves them still up there in the higher levels. They're not start moving down to a quarter of their previous salary for.
Yeah. And as well as that, I also think that sometimes when somebody's coming from that multinational level, and you alluded to it earlier, Shane, is that, you know, we in an SME sector, you're wearing multiple hats. You're doing lots of different jobs, whereas, you know, if you're part of a 10,000 man company, you're doing that one job you're hired for. And sometimes, you know, it's that's what you get used to. So, you know, we started the conversation, Shane, in regards to talking about we're in this changing way we work. In terms of that specific management, I suppose, experience, do you think it's, I suppose, how do employers really kind of focus on ensuring that their managers are able to take care of their employers, that they're not seeing that, we're a little bit over the great resignation, but that employees aren't just hopping to the next place because they're offering remote working, or, you know, that they're not leaving. So is it a case of that we're still looking in training? Is it a case of, and does it still boil down to that the manager needs to be trained adequately, I suppose?
I think kind of, you know, all of us who manage people have to accept that, you know, we are going to continue learning how to deal with this. And, you know, like when we talk about, you know, remote working or hybrid working in Chambers Ireland, we tend to contextualize it in an even broader, in the category of flexible working.
Yes.
And that's because we see this as an element to a broader field. So what might suit an individual could be, you know, compressed week. You know, it could be a 4-day week. There's different options which suit different people. And I think, you know, that flexibility in firms as to how they facilitate their employees working is going to be a big part of what goes forward. So for a manager, it is, you know, it is a bit more challenging than kind of the hovering. And I think kind of the real ones that fear what's happening are the micromanagers, you know, the ones that were always there kind of making sure that you were actually there at 9:30 and not 9:33. And that will result in a cultural shift. And, you know, those managers, rather than kind of railing against what's happening in the world, I think they really have to accept that changes have happened, and they're going to have to change with it, because they'll get left behind if they don't. You know, like we've already had, I'm sure you've in your own experience, you know, have the owner operators, you know, asking questions about, well, you know, what does that person actually do if everybody is, you know, if productivity's gone through the roof, you know, everyone's flying at home, everyone's working well, and you have a manager who doesn't seem to have a job anymore. That's the person who's vulnerable in all this.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree with that in terms of that flexibility side of things. And I think what frustrates managers and company owners is that there isn't a one-size-fits-all policy. And I have said this a couple of times, is that, you know, that graduate who's just finished college, maybe for them going into the office, meeting other people, that's the workplace that they want to go to actually be able to meet other people, learn from people, you know, maybe work one day a week from home, but ultimately perhaps they want to go into the office. For me, I'm a mom of three. Working from home is super for me when they're not at home, and that I can drop them off to school in the morning time. I don't have a long commute, so I'm home for them for dinner. That's extremely important to me. But perhaps if I had, you know, a 1 or 2 year old at home, absolutely important to me would be that I could leave the house and go to the office. So there is just a plethora of ways people can work. And it is a little bit individual. So that it might be a little bit challenging to manage. But I think that if COVID taught us anything, is really just that focus on something that we've spoken about for the last 20 years, is that work-life balance, work-life blend, whatever what you want to call it. That is ultimately what is going to help people retain staff and grow, I think, in this economy. Shane, I don't know, would you agree with my rant?
I agree with you entirely. Obviously there are certain roles, you know, that are suited to better ones. You know, my smarter half is a doctor, so you know, no escaping that one. But you know, I think part of the skill here for managers is really getting to understand how their employees are working, and you know, finding those employees that suit the business. You know, so obviously there's kind of certain businesses that do require you to be there. You know, if you're running a hotel, you know, some roles can be remote, the vast majority won't be. You know, if you're running a pub, similarly. So there's different sectors of the market. I think people will find their way towards those areas which suit them best. But if you are somebody who's managing in one of those companies, like, you need to figure out the best way to, you know, retain the talent that you need. And you know, that's where I think that, you know, there's going to be this kind of sorting issue, because like I think the rule of thumb is about, you know, a third of employees, you know, want to be in the office, a third of employees want to be at home full time, and then a third of them want to be hybrid, you know. And great, you know, there's opportunities there for everybody. I mean, if you can run a fully remote business, well, you know, there's a huge amount of your operating costs you've just walked away at that point, you know. So those things can be great opportunities for businesses. And I think we all have to find our way towards that place which suits us best as employees and also as managers.
Yeah. And I think that it could even be down to kind of a team level to give your manager the autonomy to say, well, you know what, Shane, I don't mind if you want to be at home 5 days a week. John, you want to come in for 2 days a week, that's okay. But you know what, we are going to have a monthly meeting together. So if we can all do that. So just figure out from your team perspective, which I think is important. But I also do think...
Then you get to deal with the interpersonal politics of the team itself, you know. Sure. And, you know, so why does that person get such a long leash? And it's like, well, they're doing the work, you know, they can get a longer leash.
Yeah. And that's the key. That is. And definitely, I think that it does come down to, we spoke about trust earlier, in regards to, I'm very happy for my team that if they've got kids to collect, or not even kids, but you know, if they've got a doctor's appointment or something like that, that's okay. You know, just drop me a Teams message, let me know. I have no doubt that you're going to make it back, or you know, you're still being productive. But I'm happy to work in that environment, and I'm happy to trust the team that I have to do that. And I kind of can understand if you have a new team, or if you're just used to working in a certain way, it's a difficult adjustment to make.
The ones I feel sorry for now are kind of like the early stage employees, you know, because it's easy to feel lost in a new job when you're kind of coming out into the world, you forget your first office job, and you know, you don't really know what to do, and a lot of it is kind of putting up a face and a front and all this, and then all of a sudden you're just hidden behind a laptop at home and you're trying to figure out
what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. And you don't have that, you know, the opportunity to go for a cup of coffee with your colleagues and kind of get them to fill you in or pull you into other things that are going on. You know, that's one of the other parts of kind of the remote working stuff is, you know, it's harder to really know what's happening within the business, you know, because you don't get that social time, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Now the flip side is that whenever I go into the office, you know, these days it's I'd say nearly half the time is spent just catching up, you know, so it's actually very hard to get the detailed work done.
Yeah, and I would say the exact same thing. I love to meet up with colleagues, but when I do, most of the time we're just having lunch, we're chatting, we're catching up, and in terms of actual productivity, it's probably quite low. But then I think, you know, Like I said, I'm a remote working advocate. I think that for me right now, in terms of where I am in my life, it suits me 100% and I enjoy it. However, like I said, is that I do think from we've hired a number of people the last 12 months and I do feel for them. I think it's really hard to start a new job remotely, especially if it's your first job. It's really difficult. And one of the team said, which I often think back on, is that he said, I don't even smoke, but all I really wanted to do is just to go outside with people and say, what were they talking about in there? What did that stand for? When somebody said MQL, what did that actually mean? You know, that just that kind of side chat. So I think if you are 100% remote, you just really have to work on it. That team building doesn't just come organically, which it would in the office.
You know, and again, like this is where the personality stuff features in, because I mean, like this is I think the harder part of the management is, you know, there are people for whom, you know, maybe they're not assertive enough to accept that they might get something wrong, and they might take, you know, they may not take the risk to figure out what is going on, and that's, you know, that's not a personal characteristic which is perhaps very well suited to remote working. You know, they do
and
need
okay.
their guidance, and that's fine.
Yeah,
but you know, then you also have to figure out, well, where am I best placed in that situation? You know.
Yeah, exactly. But Shane, I wonder, just in your own personal opinion, is I'm seeing lots and lots of companies, both larger side and the multinational side, which seems predominant, but also kind of that smaller company, who have just said, you know what, we don't want hybrid, we don't want remote, we're mandating everybody to come back. I think that we're going to see a number of exits from people, from employees there. I spoke to somebody recently and the company was mandating everybody to come back, and I think she's moved three counties over. So she's like, I can't actually commute 5 hours to work. You know? Do you think that's just a reactionary thing at the moment? I know we have policies in regards to, and this is a two-pronged question, my apologies, is one, is it reactionary? And the other thing, we do have policy in regards to right to request flexible working and things like that. But I don't really feel that companies who are mandating are going to take that seriously at all in regards to the right to request flexible working. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we dealt with that legislation a lot last year. Like that was, it was very much kind of something which the then Tánaiste wanted to see happen. Probably didn't go as smoothly as it might have done. And again, we would have argued that it ought to be set within a broader context of flexible working, and that should be ensured that, like, everybody should have access to, or the right to request flexible working. Because one of my kind of worries is that, you know, if flexible working, because something was brought in the Work-Life Balance Act last year. So, you know, if you are a carer, you have the right to request kind of flexible working conditions. If you're the parent of a young child, similarly. Am I worried is that these are going to get gender coded, that it'll become, flexible working becomes a thing that women can ask for because they have the kid or they have the responsibilities that, you know, get landed on them. And what I'd really like to see that kind of legislation saying is that, you know, listen, everybody has the right to request working, you know, flexible working. And if they did, you know, if that person down the corridor or on the other laptop, if that person, you know, wanted to spend time walking their dog each week, if that person wanted to spend time, you know, upskilling and education some other way, you know, that's the kind of thing which will allow everybody to take remote working, because of course the risk is that, you know, perhaps if the labor market loosens up a bit in the coming years, you know, people will start to look at, you know, and this is the stereotype, this is absolutely not my opinion, but, you know, mother age employees as being a risk, not only kind of a risk as to whether they take maternity leave, but also a risk as to whether they'll be available during the rest of the time as well, post maternity leave. So I think that needs to be better managed. Now, you know, as it stands on the remote working, you know, we only have the right to request it, you know, and it's very easy to say no.
The actual reasons to say no are huge. You know, there is a lot of, you know, there's more reasons to say no than to say yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, if companies don't want to do it, you know, they can't really be forced to do it, is my reading of the legislation. There is reasonable, you know, excuses for it. Where it kind of becomes problematic is whether, you know, one person has been granted it and someone else comes in looking for it. And I can see how there might be kind of, you know, there could be just different personality issues. Mm-hmm. You know, you might think that it suits one person, it doesn't suit another person. It could be that the business has capacity to have one person, you know, working remotely, but they actually need a body in the office for the rest of the time. These things could be happening, and that's where it'll become very difficult from an HR perspective to manage the kind of the legal kind of risk that's associated with it. So I can see why having a default option is, in one extent, easier for some employers. But what they'll find is that there's a much reduced labor pool.
I agree. And I think that the two aspects that you've touched on is, one, it's easier to, from a HR legislative perspective, I'm afraid I'm going to get sued. It's easier just to say no to everybody, because I don't want to say yes to Jane and no to John. So now John's upset that I've said, you know, so we just have a blanket that we just don't do it. You know, so that's I can understand why they would take that approach. And the second is, I also do have the same fear as you in regards to that. In a couple of years' time, it's like, oh gosh, you know, this person's in their 30s, they're childbearing years, we're going to have to deal with maternity leave, and we're going to have to deal with the fact that they can ask for flexible leave as well, and as well flexible working as well, and we don't want to do either. You know, so it's just another kind of thing for not discrimination, but you know, that kind of diversity and inclusion as well, which is there are enough issues in without creating more.
No, there's definitely a risk in it. Like you're asking before about, you know, those firms that are doing the mandate, and you know what we've seen is, you know, that the ones that do are experiencing that exit. Because there are lots of other opportunities out there in most sectors for most people. And I think, you know, to get back to the trust element of it, I think, you know, if you tell an employee that, you know, they can't work at home, you're in effect telling them perhaps that they can't be trusted, you know, and people won't take that well either. So what we've seen anyway is that those who have tried that haven't seen it be too successful to date. And they tend to not be too strict about it over the longer term, because you know you only have to lose a couple of employees, and then pull back.
Yeah, and you know, we spoke about previously on the last call, Shane, in regards to that diversity side of things, in regards to flexible working and remote working, for people who may have a disability, and I do think that. I'm intrigued why it's not spoken about more in regards to how positive remote and flexible working can be for somebody who has a disability. That it's just not spoken about. It's one of the areas that at the beginning of remote working, I had spoken to somebody about, and I was like, wow, that's incredible. It actually might just open up an entire new kind of labor force to be able to really, really benefit people who may have mobility issues or even just may have access issues or anything like that. But I don't really see that it has had any positive benefit. Would you agree, Shane, or are you seeing that there's a difference?
So I mean, like what brought us as an organization to the flexible working conversation was, you know, looking at the fact that even 5-6 years ago, you know, our members were having trouble finding the staff that they need. And when you look at the Irish labor market, you know, you see that there's big gaps, you know, particularly in women. You know, there's a huge proportion of the female population who, after that kind of childbearing leave, they don't come back. You know, they're lost to the workforce, and you know, then perhaps they get burdened with other caring within the family kind of stuff, and we find there's a very low kind of labor force engagement for, you know, particularly older women. And one of the great things that we saw over the COVID period was actually that, you know, problem reverse. You know, we saw that there was increased engagement across lots of different age groups of women. So kind of like from teens through to the, you know, plus 55s. So that was, you know, a very positive thing. I think at least in part it had to do with the remote working facilitating, you know, look, I mean, most women in the country of my age are probably, you know, as educated or better educated than myself. You know, that's a factor. Our women in Ireland are better educated than our men. And, you know, up until that kind of child rearing part of their life, we typically find that women will actually get paid more than men. You know, then kind of the mommy tax comes in.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a huge opportunity cost for all of us when people can't maintain their engagement with the workforce. So like over COVID, we saw, you know, in around the PUP stuff and the EWSS, et cetera, that, you know, people being able to maintain contact with the workforce, with the workplace, is extremely useful when it comes to, you know, getting better access to it when they need it. Now, when we bring it back into kind of the disability conversation, in Ireland is another huge untapped pool, I think, amongst our European peers. Only perhaps Moldova is worse when it comes to labour force engagement than people with disabilities.
It's not really something we should be advertising much.
No, it's a huge problem. You know, it's a huge problem for the individuals involved. You know, they are excluded, you know, from education. They are excluded from the workforce. I think one of the things that we'd like to see is, you know, that the kind of the supports that are put in place are directed towards the individual involved rather than necessarily the company. So, I mean, as things stand, you know, we can, you know, claim grants to help fix up our, you know, place of work in order to facilitate somebody who has some kind of physical incapacity. Now, if I'm someone who is, you know, who has a disability, who is seeking a new job, you know, like, I don't bring it with me. You know, you have to go, you have to take the risk and go with me. And then you have to go and you have to figure out how to, you know, make these applications, how to fill in these grants, to get that money, to get someone to come and to help, you know, fix up your premises in order to allow them to come to work. And that's a huge series of hurdles to get across. So what, you know, we'd really like to see is that individuals would qualify for the grants, you know, and very often kind of, you know, like, people might need an awful lot, but with remote working, you know, they don't necessarily need anything, but perhaps a bit of flexibility, you know, because I do know the case of like a coder who is completely quadriplegic, but continues to code, you know, codes from home, and doesn't code in, you know, the 8-hour blocks that, you know, you might expect someone to be doing if you're sitting in the office, you know. It does need more flexibility and facilitation in around that, but that's a very reasonable accommodation to manage, you know.
I think that's work.
That's exactly a very high skilled person now to start with. Exactly. So, you know, there's another journey then, and it comes to like helping people, you know, get through school and to find those places where they can apply their talents. And you know, I mean, we were talking about management earlier. I don't think we're very good at managing our own country, but this is definitely an area where we're, you know, failing systematically, you know, and I think that, you know, education access is a huge part of it, even just the school bus stuff. You know, if we had school buses, which were...
Absolutely. Funny you say that, Shane. I just got an email about the school bus and I'm like, oh my goodness, now we go into a pool and we're not guaranteed the bus, it's a disaster. But I actually, on a completely different tangent, you are 100% correct in terms of, I'm talking about how do we facilitate it in the workforce, whereas that's probably 10 steps ahead of what we can achieve, is that we see, you know, which is fantastic, hundreds of ASD units opening up, which is wonderful, and there's no secondary schools for those children to go into. So, you know, we're not giving children or people, our citizens, I suppose, access to success even at a young age. So how do we expect them to actually involve
Exactly.
be involved in the workforce when, you know, we're falling shy at the first hurdle? Yes, when it's even as basic as buses and things like that. But that another separate podcast, Shane, which we could talk about for another hour and a half. But yes, you are correct in saying, which is really interesting, in that you know, I recently looked at the application in regards to setting somebody up for that that office adaptation, and gosh, how much easier would it be if the person just qualified for it and it wasn't a barrier? They went to the job interview and said, you know what, it's all with me, ready to go, it's no problem. You know.
And again, like this is how supports ought to work, is that they need, if they're going to be effective, they need to be easy to use. You know, we saw it with, you know, the EWSS, which is relatively simple for employers to actually get, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, this is what I was giving out about last week in the Oireachtas was, you know, we saw the energy stuff come through there last October, the TBS, and it was so complicated, you know, that it you know, everyone had access to it, but it was so complicated that no one got the benefit out of it. You know, the firms which really needed the support, you know, weren't getting enough to help them. And then the firms that didn't really need support could apply, but they wouldn't get enough to make a difference anyway. So it's, you know, that kind of complication is what results in, you know, a very low uptake. So if it was made simple, you know, and what we want to see is it, make it, you know, as easy to hire somebody with a disability as it is to hire somebody without a disability. And if we can get to that place,
barrier straight, you know, there isn't that immediate barrier. And especially if we talk about, you probably have the stats on this, Shane, but in regards to the demographic of SMEs in Ireland, is whatever percentage of companies, they don't have a team of people who are able to go through the grants and understand and spend the day to be able to apply to understand, okay, Shane, this is what I've got for you now. Whereas possibly in a multinational, I might have 5 or 6 people there that it's their job to do that, you know, but majority of people are employed in that SME market. So you're kind of just making it too hard for people to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, if you're somebody with a disability, I mean, realistically, you know, you can find work within the civil service.
Yeah.
You can find work within multinationals. It's very hard to find work in other firms. And it's precisely that reason. You know, people don't necessarily have the experience of dealing with individuals with disabilities. They don't, you know how to talk about it. They don't know what to call people, whether it's a disabled person or whether it's a person with disabilities. And there's people within the community that, you know, have preferences either way. You know, like we're involved in an organization, Employers for Change, which seeks to kind of actively kind of get employers to look at that wider pool of people.
Interestingly enough, even when I was asking the question to you in regards to somebody with a disability, I was thinking in my brain beforehand, is it somebody with a disability? Is somebody who has a disability? What way am I supposed to phrase this?
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to give companies, I suppose, the reassurance of, or the training, you know, mm-hmm. people with a disability are no different to me and you. And,
well,
you know,
in that case, I would absolutely recommend kind of the people over in kind of Open Doors, which is the broader umbrella group, which kind of seeks to kind of help people gain access to the workforce who are excluded. And then within that, they have a program, which is Employers for Change. And Christabel does huge work over there trying to make it easier for employers to do it. The point I was getting to is that, you know, if you are an SME, you know, you don't have that experience dealing with an individual who has some form of disability. You don't know how to talk about it. You don't know, you know, and it becomes awkward. You know, it becomes difficult, and it becomes easier just to say, well, there's a problem with this. You know, they have a gap in their CV, and, you know, and you know, all that kind of.
And it's unconscious bias.
Unconscious bias leaks in, and, you know, it's easier for me not to have further conversations with this person, you know, and that happens. So, like, we have to be very conscious about trying to engage with it. And then, of course, the problem about, you know, like you're dealing automatically with people's very often sensitive medical information, you know, like it doesn't fit on a CV, you know. So there's a lot of, like, it, you know, it isn't easy, but it's something that we're going to have to do.
Exactly. It's definitely, and I think, you know, as policy makers yourselves or you know, advocates. I think that's it's good to hear that that's something that's on the the agenda to discuss, because I definitely think from a flexible working side of things, yeah, it shouldn't just be focused on that you have children at home or you're a carer. There's so much more to it than that. And from anybody, exactly. I have a dog at home, I need to walk. You know, whatever it is.
The thing is that, you know, there's an awful lot of hidden disability within the workforce where people, you know, have issues that they're concerned about that affect them, but, you know, perhaps they don't want to tell their employer about because, you know, because they fear what the reaction might be. And I think that's where, you know, again, the flexible working with, you know, the kind of the without justification, you know, whether it works for the business or not should be the test. And if it works for the business, well, you know, go with it. You know, I shouldn't need to know or care as to why it is that you want to do a 3-day week as opposed to a 5-day week or whatever it happens to be.
I 100% agree with you. Shane, it was so lovely talking to you, and I really do appreciate you taking out the time. I think I digress from the topic somewhat. I could spend another 2 hours speaking about disability in the workplace, in the workforce, and in our schools, but that's for another time. I'll have to get Employers for Change on for that.
Shane, now from Open Doors, and Christabel, they're fantastic people.
So Shane, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way? Through LinkedIn or send them over to the website? Always,
like LinkedIn, me, chambers.ie is a website. You know, kind of I suppose that, like, what my role is I, you know, I'm the head of policy. So we kind of help coordinate what happens for our chambers around the country. They come to us when there's a shared problem. So kind of when there's something desperately uncontroversial, we'll deal with it. Like, we don't deal with the ring roads. Everyone wants
you're not
their
the
own.
Man to talk to if I need some speed bumps outside my house.
Strange enough, no, I introduced you to a counselor for that. But no, you know, like, you know, we engage across an awful lot of policy areas, you know. So, like, I think 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we were into the budget oversight committee, talking about the future of taxation. You know, like last week, we were into the Oireachtas talking about the challenges affecting SMEs, and in 2 weeks' time, I'll be in again dealing with climate action and the SDGs. Yeah. So, you know, we cover a lot of territory at a relatively high level, but you know, I kind of suggest that you do actually engage with what we're doing, and perhaps kind of individuals can get involved in their local chambers, and get more handholding there, to be honest, because we're frantic.
I would advocate for that as well. And, you know, one area we didn't even talk about is in regards to that that green agenda as well. That's for another time.
Another time.
Exactly. So thank you, Shane, so much for your time, and I really do appreciate it. So we'll talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for time.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Check us out at hrlocker.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Make sure to subscribe to catch the latest episodes on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you would like to feature on a future podcast, get in touch by emailing us at marketing@hrlocker.com.